Oh, welcome in to another daily editorial here on the KE Report. I'm chatting with Craig Hemke, founder and editor of TFMetalsReport.com. Now, Craig, no doubt that fear, panic is in these markets and everything is getting sold off. I've talked a lot about where the sell-offs are going, and quite frankly, no one knows where they're going to stop. But if we use history as an example, and it's hard to use history in this sort of a sense because a lot of this is pretty unprecedented, but when we do see major sell-offs and panic, fear, take hold of the markets, there tends to be certain assets, certain investments that do rebound. Now, again, that doesn't mean go out and buy these assets now because you don't know how much lower they're going to go, but there generally is kind of these safer assets that do bounce back. Take us through what you're telling your subscribers and all the visitors to your site about how this all could play out. What are the potentials here?
Yeah. You know, Corey, with the benefit of hindsight, I and everybody else, and I'm sure all of everybody on your site wishes, you know, we'd have sold all of our mining shares 2 weeks ago or even last week. And if you did, yeah, I saw a thing from, I think that Nassim Taleb guy who said, you know, if you got panicked out of the market a week ago, you're not panicking now. I guess there's some truth to that. And there's two things going on. One is a liquidity problem, and even the Fed is now admitting that and trying to address that. We can talk about that too, but there's a major liquidity problem, and if it has a bid, it's being sold across the board, even in the bond market. If it has a bid, it's being sold, and gold futures and silver futures are part of that. There's always a bid, and so therefore, as you're trying to raise cash or have margin calls or whatever, everything gets dumped. And part of the reason for that is the uncertainty. I've joked, and I maybe joke's not the right term, but I've joked this week that, I mean, I don't have weekly charts and commitment of traders data from 1918, right? So it's not as if I can go, well, you know, the last time we had a global pandemic like this called the Spanish flu, you know, the central banks responded by doing this, you know, I mean, and that's that the unprecedented quality part of this is what is sparking the panic, the liquidation, whatever. But here's the thing. What we do have some precedent for is what happens when you come out the other side, because I don't believe, and I don't think the science of the epidemiology would suggest that this is some kind of Mad Max, you know, zombie apocalypse type scenario that is unfolding. It's going to be massive stress on the healthcare system, and you hope that it doesn't get in Canada or the U.S. to the point where emergency rooms are overrun like we've seen in Italy or in China. We hope it doesn't get that way, but that's, you know, obviously, I think probably the biggest concern. And so if we don't have total economic breakdown that is unrecoverable, and I don't think that's going to be the case, then I would invite everybody to remember back to where we were in 2008 and 2009. And eventually the conversation will shift again. Remember 2009 was all about the green shoots, Corey? Remember that? And it was the economy that was rising from the ashes like the phoenix. And green shoots were emerging from the rubble like they do after a forest fire. And that will happen again. It may happen as soon as just a couple of months from now. Well, in the meantime, because of the precarious quality and of what has happened in the last 10 years and this massive everything bubble that is now in the process of being burst or has burst, where the Fed was able and the global central banks were able to kind of ameliorate the problem a dozen years ago with, you know, $3 trillion growth of the Fed balance sheet, maybe $25 trillion sloshing around the planet, you know, to reinflate everything. Well, that ain't going to be enough this time. I mean, it's going to be three or four times that. We saw the first announcement of that about an hour ago with the Fed drastically increasing the size of the daily repo operations to try to keep things greased with cash overnight. What will be announced next week at the FOMC may be some massive, huge new quantitative easing program. We may, and actually I kind of though I would be on any other circumstances against it, we may get into helicopter money, which we can talk about how that might be the most humanitarian thing that the central banks can do if they were actually out with humanitarian goals. Anyway, there are going to be massive, massive, almost unimaginable levels of fiat creation in central bank policy that's going to be done. And then when you get these green shoots going, again, we know what happened in 2009, the stock market bottom, but the precious metals and the mining shares bottom before that. And then we all know what happened as all of that cash that was created during the crisis and after begins to get back into the markets. We know what happened with the price of gold, the price of silver, the price of the mining shares. And so this is tough. This is a brutal week. This is no fun. My God. However, I think if you don't think this is the end of the world, and if you wait until a time when some level of rational thinking comes back in, probably going to see some rather historic moves off the bottom. I just wouldn't be out there trying to fish and try to pick a bottom too early.
Yeah, it's really tough. But the one thing that I think is really interesting as well, and it's been talked about, is that this fear and panic has not really been driven by something financial. This is medical, and this could be one reason why all these central banks that have already come out just in the last couple weeks with easier money policies have not been able to support these markets. Yes, we do keep on getting negative headlines time and time again, but fact of the matter is these central banks are already in a race to negative territory and injecting a lot of capital into the system, and it's not seeming to have an impact. I think it will in the long run when some of this fear dissipates, but right now it's not. So how are you balancing out all this easy money, this easier money policy that isn't having any impact?
Well, yeah, the desire, the amount of money hitting the bid is outweighing any optimism or anybody, you know, or I'm hitting the offer is outweighing anybody that wants to get on the bid, right? And so things just keep going down. I don't know. You know, I've read that stuff about it's not a financial crisis, it's health. Yeah, absolutely. However, the interconnectivity of the global financial system would suggest that it will become a financial crisis. Let's take for one example, and you may have discussed this from time to time over the course of this week, but look at the energy sector. You know, the way the price of crude oil has come down, that not only imperils, you know, traditional energy companies and their debt service obligations, but what about the shale industry? And the amount of corporate and what is also high yield debt that is held by not only banks, but hedge funds, even yield searching mutual funds and the like, that stuff could all default. And you get this kind of daisy chain, not unlike what we saw with credit default swaps and CMOs and CEOs and everything else 12 years ago. So it is the economic impact of this health problem is very real. You know, as this ripples through all of these different sectors that are being impacted. And I don't, you know, again, I'm not a fan. I would never have been a fan of, you know, what's called helicopter money, but I would sure hope that the Federal Reserve and the other global central banks, don't just simply create money for banks thinking that that solves all the problems. Because the vast majority of the population in your country, mine, around the globe, is considered middle or lower income, and people that don't even have really any savings, right? What, a third of the population, or two-thirds of the population, maybe the U.S., doesn't even have $1,000 in savings. Well, if you're working in the service economy or whatever, and you no longer have that job, or you don't have it for a couple of months, how are you going to pay your credit cards? How are you going to pay your mortgage, your rent, all of that stuff? So I, you know, when the Fed meets next week, I sure hope they're working on something that says, okay, we get the data, you know, this is a gross oversimplification, but in my little mind, you know, you would think they could get the data from our Internal Revenue Service and say, okay, you showed last year a W-2 income of under $60,000. Therefore, we're going to cut you a check for $2,000 in the hope that this will help pass you through. if that's 50 million people, if my math is right, that would be $100 billion. Well, $100 billion is just dropping the frickin' bucket compared to what they're going to be floating out to the banks in the weeks ahead. And that would help a lot of regular people. I say this because this probably really is a time when extraordinary measures are going to be taken to kind of keep things alive and get this green shoots to come up. As all of that cash ripples through, I mean, people just go, you know, and rationality returns. People, again, realize what this does to the concept of sound money, that kind of thing. And you get a bid for gold and silver. Much like, and it may happen a lot faster than it happened. Everything else in the world's happening faster, Corey. May happen a lot faster than from 2009 to 2011. So, again, everybody's got to make their own personal decisions. You got to look at your own risk tolerance, your own time horizons, all of that stuff, and then decide for yourself how you want to act from this moment going forward. But I would suggest that history, though, is not a guide in the present. I think history can be a guide for how we've recovered, how things have acted in the past in a recovery. And at some point, we've got to start thinking about that.
Now, Craig, I just had a conversation with Eric Wetterling, and we were even talking about the potential of the markets in general being suspended or paused for who knows how long. But we're getting news today that it's almost every major sporting league is postponing or suspending, they're saying, their seasons until they get a little bit more clarity here. The U.S. is already stopping travel to and from Europe. Do you see this trickling so much into the markets that maybe we do get a little bit of a holiday when it comes to markets closing for a couple days, a couple weeks?
No, it wouldn't be unprecedented. After 9/11, how long was the New York Stock Exchange closed? It was a week, I think, wasn't it? Now you could say, well, yeah, hell's bells. You know, you had the buildings fall just down the street. But that did. Why couldn't they have had the NASDAQ open? Right? That's all just done by computer. They didn't have market makers and or need a physical plant to be able to do that. So it wouldn't be unprecedented. Now, my memory serves me right, because that's now 19 years ago almost. When the markets reopened after a week, they tanked pretty good for, you know, a day or two and then stabilized. So, I mean, to answer your question, yeah, heck yes, it's possible because they've done it before.
Yeah, and we're all still, again, just sitting here wondering what's going to happen. But when you see this much red on the screen, more red than we have seen in a day from 50, 60 years ago, that's some of the info that I'm seeing. That's, you know, it's a scary time, not just for investors, but really for everybody out there.
Corey, I want to add this, though, because this does tie into your question about shuttering the markets for a couple of days, because this really does kind of spiral out of control. You know, if everything's being dumped for liquidity, and then by dumping it, you're creating more liquidity issues, right? Then maybe there is, I mean, an argument for that type of thing to happen. So I think that's something people need to be not necessarily frightened of as a possibility, but aware that it could be a possibility.
All right, Craig, we're going to wrap it up there. I wish we had more answers, but you know what? Just staying on top of the situation is important, and we will, you know, see how this all plays out. Hopefully when we chat next week, things will be a little bit calmer, but there's no telling. Nobody knows the answer to that.
I hear you.
Craig, great chatting with you. Thanks for your time. Have a good weekend.